You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome in. It is a special edition of the Albert Breer Show, the day after the first round of the NFL draft. And because everybody's always talking about the quarterbacks, I wanted to give you guys some special perspective on how each guy fits each place he's going. Obviously, a very, I'd say, newsworthy night in the way everything came down. At the end of it, we had the chalk, which was Trevor Lawrence becoming a Jaguar, Zach Wilson becoming a Jet, a curveball in Trey Lance becoming a Niner. Most people thought Mac Jones would wind up there. And then a couple of, I think, guys who slid a little bit but wound up in logical places. The Chicago Bears need a quarterback. They trade up for Justin Fields. And Mac Jones goes to the New England Patriots. And to help us with all of this, we're going to bring in my favorite quarterback expert, an old buddy of mine and guy who used to sit next to me on a TV set. He's at Sirius XM Radio now, former Notre Dame head coach, former Patriots offensive coordinator, former Chiefs offensive coordinator, former Kansas head coach, Charlie Weiss. What did I miss, Charlie? Did I get enough there?
The offensive coordinator of Florida as well. But
yep.
And the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I'm just means I'm old.
I missed a couple.
It just means I'm old.
Okay. Well, like, let's start here. Your big takeaway when you look at how the quarterbacks fell, I want to break down each fit and how, you know, you think each guy is going to work in the place that he's at. But when you see the, you know, five guys come off the board in the first 15 picks, you know, quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3 for just the third time ever. I think 71 and 99 were the other two. What was your big takeaway from the first night when it came to that position?
Well, I mean, Trevor Lawrence was everyone's first pick. So that, you know, that was the simplest one that we could talk about out of all of them. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons Urban took the job, you know, because he knew that, you know, waiting in the wings would be Trevor Lawrence. You know, you get one of these players every decade, you know, that come out at least on appearance. That's what it looks like it's going to be. So, I mean, that was the easy one. Really, the intrigue starts after him.
Yeah.
Because if you look at these other guys, people are all over the place. Now, I know all over the place, it's been assumed for quite some time that Zach Wilson was going to the Jets. The question I have is why?
Yeah.
I mean, why was Zach Wilson always the guy? Because if let's just take just Justin Fields and Zach Wilson. Let's take Trey Lance and Jones out of this, you know, Mac Jones out of this for the time being. What has he done that Justin Fields hasn't done?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fair question.
Against lesser competition.
Right.
I mean, I don't get it. Now, I have no disrespect for Zach Wilson. I just don't understand it. I mean, but, you know, it did play out that way. So whether the Jets were letting people know that was their guy or not, I mean, it was all over the place that they were taking Zach Wilson. So, and they did. So therefore, you know, that match seemed to be fine. The real intrigue of this entire draft as far as leading up to yesterday, forget about Aaron Rodgers for a second. But leading up to yesterday, was San Francisco given all that collateral to come up to three to take their quarterback of the future and us not knowing who it was?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really something if you think about it, that there were only a couple of things that could have happened. Number one, they came up to three saying, look it, after we like at least three guys enough to come up to number three, and one of them was there, or the Jets could have said, look it, because of the relationship between Saleh and the organization, said, look it, we're going to take Zach Wilson. We're in the AFC, you're in the NFC. We're going to take Zach Wilson. This way you can get ready to take whoever you want.
Right.
Well, that could have happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying it did happen, but it could have happened. Or it could have just been, you know, go do your due diligence and find out which one you want it to be and go ahead and take one. You know, everyone assumed it was going to be Mac Jones for quite some time. But think about how the odds changed in the last 3 weeks.
Yep.
At different times, all those quarterbacks were favored to be the guy.
Right.
All three of them were favored to be the guy at different times. So at the end of the day, they go with Lance. A bit of a surprise to me, but, you know, as of yesterday morning, he was the favorite, Vegas odd favorite. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't in Vegas. You know, they thought he was going there. But that was a bit of a surprise to me. And when that happened, you know, everything hit the fan, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because it was a trickle-down effect, and it just wasn't where Justin Fields and Mac Jones ended up. It was because they didn't end up taking more than three quarterbacks in the top 10 picks that affected a lot of other picks in the first round.
Right.
You know, a lot of other player position were taken because quarterback spots, when they're eaten up, that's another player that gets pushed down closer to the rest of the pack. So it was really interesting. And I think the real winners of this really were both the Bears and the Patriots.
Right.
Because the Bears knew they couldn't get into the top 10. They didn't have the collateral to get into the top 10 to go after one of their guys. And then all of a sudden, it's outside the top 10.
Yeah.
Now they could go ahead. They're in striking range. Yep. They could go up and, hey, look it, they had to give up collateral, but they ended up getting one of the main guys. Justin Fields wasn't just a guy. He might have been the second best quarterback in a whole draft.
Yeah, and that's the amazing thing about the value of it to me. Like, I look at it, Charlie, and it's like a lot of people are saying the cliff in this draft. Like, teams are going to be in their second round grades by the time you get to like 17 or 18. So maybe the Bears were looking at taking a guy where they were at 20. And maybe that guy had a second round grade for them versus a guy who may have been the second overall pick. And maybe if he had stayed at Ohio State for another year, he would have been the number one overall pick next year. And so, like, that's where I kind of like look at it. Like, if you're the Bears, you're looking at it and saying, okay, we'd be getting the equivalent of a second rounder at 20. So why wouldn't we give up next year's one to go and do this? If this is a guy who we think could be, you know, whatever, maybe the first pick in 2022.
We chastised the Bears a lot, right, Bert?
Yeah.
Over the last few years, they've gotten hammered on pretty good. But you have to say, I wouldn't call this a gutsy move. I thought it was a smart move.
Yeah.
I really did. And to be honest with you, I thought it was a smart move for the Giants as well. You know, I thought that was a win-win trade. And how many times is there a win and a win on a trade?
Yeah.
Usually somebody wins and somebody loses. Yeah. Well, once Devontae Smith wasn't there for the Giants, I mean, trading down and getting Tony and picking up the extra collateral, I thought that was a smart move by the Giants as well. I think both teams ended up on the long end of the stick, and that hardly ever happens.
Right. So before we jump into like the each one of these guys, I do want to give you a chance to answer this because I always think this is so interesting. The nature versus nurture argument. And like, you know, I always think of Tom and how he came up and like no pressure on him. You know, he's sort of anonymous. I mean, he's quarterback at Michigan, so he's not anonymous, but he comes in as a sixth round pick. And he has a year where he's kind of able to develop in the shadows. And then, you know, obviously one thing leads to another. You guys create the right environment. So just like when you look at the way these guys are developed, how big a factor is the situation that each guy goes into? Like, so, how big a factor is it, like, one guy's situation versus the next guy's situation in what they'll ultimately become?
I think it's underestimated by a lot of people. I do. I think it makes a big difference, the situation, the coaching they're in, the players they're playing with, the environment, the team, the division. I think all those things factor in. I'm going to use a current example. Sam Darnold's going into year four. I liked him come out of college. I didn't love him. I liked Baker more than him, but I did like him second. I liked him more than Josh Allen, even though Josh Allen's played better. I did like him better than Josh Allen. Right now, he's going into his fourth year in the league. I have no idea if he's any good. How can that be?
Yeah.
How can it be that after 3 years in the NFL and where he's played, I don't know if he stinks or if it was just the environment that he was in.
Right.
Now, why is that? Well, coaching's part of the blame, right?
Yep.
He's part of the blame. Coaching's part of the blame. Management's part of the blame. His teammates are part of the blame. And the whole negative atmosphere around the organization is part of the blame. All those things are part of that. Now, I'm really fascinated to see what's going to happen when he is – hey, look, they just picked up his fifth-year option today.
Yeah.
So they wanted to see what they did in the first round if they were going to take a quarterback. Well, they didn't take a quarterback, so they picked up his fifth-year option. You know, Sam Darnold, 2 years from now, we might say, wow, look how good he was. But right now, we couldn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we couldn't say how good he is because there's no evidence of it at this time.
And then the flip side is like Patrick Mahomes, who is coached by Andy Reid, who had great tackles, who – hang on 1 second, Charlie. He said, can you turn off the sound of your notifications on your phone? Sorry, that's the producer.
Okay. How will I do it?
Yeah, I guess your emails are on your computer, he said.
I'm going to do that one step further.
Okay.
I'm just going to turn the phone off.
Okay, all good. All right. You ready to go, Shelby?
So okay. Shelby can't bitch me. My phone's off.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1. I mean, the flip side then is Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, coached by Andy Reid, so he has that going for him. The two tackles in front of him, both big money players, Eric Fisher and Mitch Schwartz. He's thrown to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. He's, you know, his first year playing, they draft the guy who wins the rushing title. So, I mean, maybe Patrick Mahomes would have made it anyway. Obviously, he had a lot, like, there's a lot there, regardless of what was around him.
Can I interject one thing?
Yeah.
And he learned under Alex Smith on top of it.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's significant. You can't downplay the type of person he came behind.
Yeah.
Because we've heard Joe Flacco say, I'm not here to mentor the young guys. Well, Alex Smith is just the opposite of that. Ryan Fitzpatrick is the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. There are certain guys that they'll do all they can to help young guys get better. And so that was part of Patrick Mahomes' greatness can be attributed to the relationship that he had with Alex Smith.
Right. All right. Let's go one by one through these then. And, I guess we could just start right off the top. Like, A, do you agree that Trevor Lawrence is a generational prospect? Like you said off the top, like a once since Andrew Luck type of prospect. And then B, what do you think about the fit playing for Urban Meyer in Jacksonville?
Oh, I believe he is a generational type of player, number one. And two, I think that Urban is a smart guy. Okay, he brings in two veteran guys to run the offense, both Bevel and Schottenheimer, right? He brings in two, not just one. So you got two guys working on that group together, okay? Because Urban basically wants to run the team, not run the offense. Mm-hmm. So he brings in two veteran guys, and those guys have been around good players. For example, Russell Wilson.
Right.
You know, and I think they got a pretty good idea when you have a talent to figure out what to do with them. I could say that relatively safely based off of watching and based off of the evidence.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned, you know, Shoddy and Bevel. Bevel worked with Russell as a rookie and started Russell as a rookie. And then Shoddy, if I'm not mistaken, was the OC for Mark Sanchez when he was a rookie with the Jets. So not only those guys have experience with really good quarterbacks, they have experience having started rookie quarterbacks, which I would think makes a difference too.
Well, it helps, but really when you're starting a rookie quarterback, it's like starting anyone for the first time. You have to figure out what they do well and just do more of that. You know, too many times coaches want to have good ideas, but the players can't handle those good ideas. So what difference does it make if you have a good idea if the players can't handle it? You know, you got to give them stuff that they can handle.
What separates Trevor? Like, if you look at Trevor being generational, what separates Trevor?
Well, he's got a lot of the qualities that Mac Jones has, only he's much more athletic.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Trevor Lawrence is Mac Jones on steroids because he's bigger, faster, stronger, you know, like stronger arm. You know, the only thing he hasn't that he is behind Mac Jones is he has not been exposed to as much offensive philosophy as Mac has, both with Brian Daboll, you know, when he was younger, and then Sarkisian afterwards.
Right.
So, you know, coming into the NFL, he has more to learn than Mac does walking in the door.
Okay. Zach Wilson with the Jets. What do you think about his fit with Michael Fleur now, Robert Saleh, first-year head coach, first-year offensive coordinator? They're going to try to take the Shanahan offense there. What do you think of Zach Wilson's fit in New York?
Well, see, no one's comparing him to the guy that I would compare him to.
Who is?
Baker,
okay.
That's who he reminds me of.
What do you see? What elements of Baker's game do you see with him?
He can make any throw from anywhere, from any position. You know, and tough, athletic. You know, he's probably a little bit more athletic than Baker, but, you know, don't turn down anything. You know, moxie, you know. You know, just because you roll to the left in shorts and throw the ball across the field doesn't make you, you know, God's gift to the world.
Okay. Right.
And he was playing against a lower level of comp than some of these other guys were. But he reminds me a lot of Baker in his composition.
What do you think the challenge, like, because you coached for both the Jets and the Giants, how is it different playing in New York? Like, how is it different for being a quarterback in New York? And how do you think a kid who grew up in Utah and played at BYU is going to handle that? Like, what sort of adjustment do you think that's going to be for him?
Well, you know, he's probably Mormon, so he's going to have to learn where the temple is.
Yeah.
You know, and not that there's going to be a huge Mormon population, but there's a Mormon population everywhere. So it's not going to be a question of whether or not he can do that. But that's not my point. My point is it's all going to depend on the guidance and leadership of both the coaches and the management. Because I think that anytime a guy comes in, he is going to be your team spokesman on offense, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be the guy. He needs to be the guy on championship teams. Have you ever seen a quarterback that wasn't the guy when it came to talking to the media?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always been that way. So I think he's going to need some guidance, and I think that they'll give him guidance. This isn't just going to be just throw them to the wolves, to the media, because as you know, if you just go and just you're an outspoken, just go ahead and speak, especially as a young guy in the metropolitan area, you'll get eaten by the wolves, so to speak. So he's going to need some guidance.
So are you limiting him then as far as what, like, are you saying, listen, like, we just got to kind of, you just got to be a football player this first year and we got to kind of like limit what you're doing and keep you kind of away from the bright lights of the city that you're playing in. Or is there no avoiding that? Or do you think he needs to adjust to it and it's better to get that started right away?
I know. We used to tell rookies, for example, mm-hmm. just come in and keep your mouth shut. When you've done something, we'll let you talk to the media.
Right.
That was our philosophy. When you've done something in this league, maybe we'll let you talk to the media. But you haven't done anything yet. All right. you've done is get drafted. You haven't done a darn thing. So just put your nose at a grindstone and we'll worry about the media later on. Now, when they first come in, there's the dog and pony show. You have to go through it. But other than that, you shouldn't hear a lot of this guy for quite some time.
Do you have concerns about him? I mean, you mentioned the comp to Baker and comparing him to Justin Fields and, you know, what Fields has and what he has. Is there anything about his game that concerns you?
No, I'm worrying a little bit about social media and things like that, because you better learn about social, control of social media. You know that, Bert. I'm not telling you. You don't know.
Ooh, I need to learn control of social media.
You do, by the way. We'll have that conversation some other time. Anyone with some guidance. I remember when I first went to the Jets, okay? When we first went to the Jets, I remember the first day I was sitting in my office, Keyshawn Johnson comes walking in. Now, he had just written that book, Just Give Me the Damn Ball.
Right.
This was after we had got before we had gotten here, he wrote it.
Yeah.
So he walked in and he sits down and I'm listening to him. And after about 10 minutes, I put my hand up. And I said, you know what, Key? I really don't care what you think right now. When you've showed me all these things that you just said, I'll be willing to listen. But until that time, you know, your opinion doesn't mean too much to me. I don't know if anyone had ever said that to him.
How do you react?
He was fine with it.
Yeah.
And you want to know something? I have utmost respect for Keyshawn because no one worked any harder than him.
Yeah.
No one. So mm-hmm. you had this image like he was, you know, some flake or something. Not him.
Yeah.
I mean, on and off the field. He'd study tape as well as anyone I saw. And on the field, if you told him, hey, you're really having trouble, you know, keeping your feet in bounds on the sideline on the tight throws, he would keep a quarterback after, and for a half hour, he'd go work on it, just him and that guy.
Right.
So you get this image of people like, oh, you know, like, you know, he's always talking, he's always this. I don't mind people talking just as long as they practice what they preach.
So that's what's going to be with Zach then, is like making him earn it first and making him like, all right, you can show your personality, but you got to like sort of, you know, earn your way to have that like, you know, outward persona. You got to earn it internally first.
Hey, and you look at the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy Brady had it really tough when he was first playing.
Yeah.
Because Drew Bledsoe was on the team.
Right.
Now, he was in the hospital at first, but, I mean, it was Drew Bledsoe's team. So what's he going to do? You know, he's a second-year player who hasn't played a down of meaningful football. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to act like it's his team?
Right.
So he had to earn that team. And it's not like you wave a magic wand and it's your team overnight.
Right. All right. So let's go then to the kind of the big thing that everybody was anticipating for the last month, which was, what are the Niners going to do at 3? Were you surprised the Niners wound up taking Trey Lance? You know, you've obviously, you know, coached against Mike Shanahan in many occasions. You've been on the field with Kyle before. Were you surprised that Trey Lance was the pick over Mac Jones?
I was surprised. I was a little surprised, but I wasn't, as time went on. You know, it was Mac Jones. And as time went on, you started hearing more about Justin Fields and then Trey Lance, then another Justin Fields workout and another Trey Lance workout where, you know, they're almost personal workouts just for the 49ers. And then you do some study. I know that North Dakota State, even though it's a lower level of comp, plays a more of a pro style of football than most Division One schools do in America.
Right.
They run check with me's, they run under center, they run play action. They run the ball a lot more than most teams do, by the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know a lot about the program. So it's not like this guy hasn't been well-schooled. And then you look at his numbers. I think coming into this year, what was it, 28 touchdowns, no interceptions?
Yep.
I mean, you kind of like that ratio a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, it's not bad.
Well, it's not a bad.
It almost looks like a misprint when you look at it on the North Dakota website. It almost looks like a misprint. Yeah.
And then didn't he have like another 20 touchdowns running or something like that?
Yeah, rushed for 1,000 yards. Yeah.
And so, I mean, you look at this, and regardless of what level you're playing at, all you could do is dominate the guys you're playing with.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's you can't get penalized. Because they're not playing against Alabama. You play against who you play against. Was I surprised? I was mildly surprised only because I thought Mac was going to be the guy. But it's almost like Kyle wanted to challenge himself.
Right.
You know, take this guy who's got a really high ceiling and have to figure out things that are kind of outside his comfort zone. Because I think that that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to do some. It would be wasting this guy's athleticism if you don't use some of those things. Plan on doing some of those things that are outside his normal comfort zone.
Do you see superstar ability with Trey Lance? Like, because we saw what the Shanahans, that was that one year with Robert Griffin in Washington, and how electric that was. And I think that like the injury and the personal. Like personality clash there may have played more into like that not working long term, but we saw like we've seen like glimpses of that, and then going way back, like, you know, the quarterbacks that Mike Shanahan had, you know, earlier in his career were like Steve Young, like John Elway. We saw what he was capable with those sorts of guys. So I mean, do you look at this and say, man, if the kid puts it together, and Kyle Taylor's the offense right for him? Like, this could really, really explode. Because I sort of get that feeling looking at it, you know, like just kind of putting one together.
That's not how I'm looking at it. You know, I'm looking at it, they better be right.
Yeah.
For what they gave up.
Yeah.
And for who they passed on, they better be right. That's how I'm looking at it. You know,
do you think the ceiling's high, though?
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
I do think the ceiling's very high. But, you know, there's a lot of unknown here now. The guy's played for 1 year.
Right.
And
right.
Hasn't played in a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so he's played for 1 year and hasn't played in a year. So we're betting, you know, we're betting on 1 year against a low level of comp a year ago. Think about that now.
Yeah.
To give up all what they gave, all those draft choices, to move up to number three, to pick a guy who hasn't played in a year – and only played for a year.
Right.
I mean, that's saying a lot now.
What does the reps thing come in for you? Like, you know, you hear that a lot. Like, the coaches want quarterbacks to have a certain amount of throws in college. The coaches want quarterbacks to have a certain amount of starts in college. Is that just a matter of, I guess, volume of things you've seen? Is that the way you look at it? Or
see, we didn't look at it like that. You know, okay. There are some people say they'd like to have them have 30 starts. It used to be you want them to have 40 starts.
Right.
You know, but now people want them to have 30 starts. You know, I look at some of these guys, you know, are a victim of circumstance. Look at like Mac Jones. He's playing behind Jalen and Tua.
Right.
But he's there the whole time. And he's running the scout team, tearing up that good defense right there, having fun every day. Because he gets to go against a Pro Bowl, caliber defense. Mm-hmm. Every day with all these guys that are getting drafted into the NFL. So he sits behind those guys. So even though he wasn't playing in games, every day he's playing against a high caliber of competition. Now, can you say that about the other guys?
Right. Yeah.
You could say it about Fields. But
right.
Can you say that about Trey?
No, it's not the same.
You're not saying it about Trey.
Right.
No, so, I mean – you know, I think that, you know, when you're looking at it right there, you're saying, okay, you know, we're going to go on 1 year, and you know, we've seen all the things he could do athletically, and we see the numbers, and we interviewed him. Hey, I had him on my show last week. I was really impressed talking to him.
Yeah,
you know, but and he has a legit reason for sitting out.
Right,
his team was going to play in the spring. I mean, that's a legit reason to.
It's not his fault. Yeah,
that's right. That's a legit reason. But still, I mean, I think that there's some risk here.
Sure. Okay. Justin Fields, you know, obviously, you know, I think he's been connected. I mean, him and Trevor have been connected to each other since they were 16 years old. Plays in a national championship game. Got to the playoffs the year before after transferring from Georgia. Now he's going to go play for Matt Nagy. And, you know, it's interesting to me, Charlie, because Matt, like, you know, people tie him to Trubisky, but, like, the year before that, like, he was the offensive coordinator for Andy in Kansas City. So he was also a huge part of Patrick Mahomes' development and had a hand in that. So, like, how do you see the fit, Matt Nagy, like that Andy Reid style of offense with Justin Fields dropped into it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I could ask you the question, you know, how's Mahomes done?
Really well.
So, I mean, he has a lot of elements of Mahomes, wouldn't you
right. say? Yeah, I mean, he's got the big arm. He's probably not as, like loose an athlete, right? Like, but he's...
But is a better runner than Mahomes.
A better – he's faster, yeah, you know, no question.
I mean, so, I think that, you know, hey, look, Mahomes is rare. Let's face it. I mean, he's not perfect at everything, but I mean, he's as good a player as we've ever seen. I mean, have you seen anyone
at that age? No. I mean, like what he's doing is unprecedented. Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing what we're watching right there with him, and he doesn't show any signs of stopping. You know, it just seems like he's going to get better every year. But you know, you look at Justin Fields. I mean, some people say, well, he doesn't read fast enough. He doesn't go through his progression fast enough. I mean, he's just running their offense.
Yeah.
Now he's going to come to this offense, and they're going to figure out what he does. You know, my advice, and I actually gave this advice to somebody close to the organization here today. I said, look, figure out what he can do the best and just do a lot of that. You know, and sometimes people don't do the common sense thing. And the common sense thing is when you have a young quarterback, you don't ask him to do things in the beginning that he's no good at. You grow into those things. You figure out what you do the best, and then you do a whole lot of that.
Was that like, what was Tom, I just had curiosity, what was Tom good at that like you did early in his, like, was there something that like.
In the beginning, we were dinking and dunking. Remember, yeah. Everyone says, well, he can't throw the ball down the field.
Right.
Because we had a really good defense.
Yeah.
So when he started playing, we played to our defense.
Right.
In other words, there'd be times where on third down, I would run the ball, and if we didn't get it, we'd punt.
Yeah.
You know, and as the year went on, we did more. And next thing you know, he's winning the Super Bowl on a 2-minute drive against the Rams. I mean, obviously he progressed fast, but anytime you have these guys, you know, you don't have to give them everything to do.
Right.
You have to give them enough to do. You know,
yeah.
That's what you need to do.
Okay, now we'll get to the one that I think you're going to know best. You've got pretty good connections in that Alabama program. Your kid used to work for Nick there, Charlie Jr. So you know that program inside and out. I'm assuming you know Mac pretty well. You know the Patriots program really well, having worked there for 5 years and having worked with Bill going back to the 90s. Like, when the Patriots were on the clock, did you have a pretty good feeling it was going to be Mac?
I couldn't see any other choice.
Okay, why do you say that?
Well, I mean, because, look, you know Bill loves corners.
Yep.
And the first couple of corners were gone.
Yep.
I mean, if all of a sudden Surtain is there, they could take him. If Horn was there, they could take him. Because, you know, he loves those guys.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of defensive ends this year, so that wasn't going to be the pick.
Right.
No. So then you look, well, you know, if one of those frontline receivers are around, you know, even though he doesn't like taking receivers in the first round either, I mean, that could have been the pick.
Yeah.
I mean, based off of who was there, I would have been shocked if it was anyone but Mac Jones.
Why is Mac a good fit for that place?
Well, he's all the things that we describe in a quarterback is what he is.
Right.
Every single quality that we describe.
Yeah.
You know, I hope he doesn't have to play in wind like I saw him at his press conference today.
Right.
Because they're having the press conference. Were you at the press conference?
No, I was not. But well, was it?
At the press conference, he's almost getting knocked over by the wind. It's like a gale force wind in it. I mean, you know, so he's going to have to learn to throw on windy days because, as you know,
yeah,
some windy days at Gillette Stadium, they do occur.
Right.
But that being said, he has all the components. You know, all the components that you look at these, all the players that we had there, there are certain attributes you want. Mm-hmm. But the ones that are the most important ones for a quarterback really are three.
Yeah.
Does he have the it factor? Can he handle the game mentally? Can he throw accurate passes?
Mm-hmm.
They're the three, all three. For a quarterback. Yeah.
Check.
Yeah, but they are the three main ones. Now, you could add everything else after that, okay, but they are the three main qualities, and, you know, he's getting an A on all three of those.
Do you see any Tom in him?
Oh, absolutely I do. But, see, it isn't fair to compare.
I know it's not fair, but stylistically, you know what I'm saying? Like, these are never fair.
I grew up with Parcells saying there's a whole bus station full of the next Lawrence Taylors.
Right.
Because every time somebody could rush the passer, he's the next Lawrence Taylor. And then that's such a high expectation to put somebody up again. But do I see a lot of Tommy's elements, Tommy's makeup in Mac? The answer is absolutely yes.
Is it like, so I've heard like pocket awareness is one. Right, pocket athleticism, pocket awareness. That's there, right? Like that's similar?
Absolutely. Moving in the pocket, because let's face it, Tom is not the fastest person in the entire free world. But he always seemed to find that uncanny ability to be able to have that sixth sense and move, you know, move within the pocket and move from the pocket when necessary. And I think that this guy, you know, even though he played against a good offensive line, he's very seldom getting hit.
Right. And then accuracy is another one, and decision making and processing and all of that, right? Well, like that's all.
They're all tied together, though. You know,
right.
You know, they are. But when you can make good decisions and you're still not accurate, you got a problem.
You yeah.
Know? When you're accurate but you don't make good decisions, you got a problem.
Right.
I mean, so they all have to go together.
Do you think that, like, I mean, when you look at him, do you think he should be playing early then? Like, if you're them, are you playing him early?
No, I think that, you know, this is a perfect setup. Let's face it, Cam has every excuse for not playing very well last year.
Right.
Every excuse. Now, yeah. He is definitely part of the problem. You know, he himself is part of the problem. But his talent around him was not very good. No OTAs coming in, learning the new system without being there, and in COVID, both in the big picture and the fact that he got it himself.
Right.
I mean, you add all those things together, it was like the perfect storm. You know,
right.
It was like everything that could go wrong went wrong. So a year in the system, a year more grooming on, you know, working on fundamentals. He'll slightly improve his fundamentals, but in reality, all those other things will be better. Therefore, he'll be better. And from what I understand, even though I'm not there, I'm heard he's beloved in the locker room, in the building. I hear nothing but good things about the guys, which is a very strong positive. So from my standpoint, with that being said, when Mac plays, it'll be a combination of two things. When Mac is ready and when Cam gives him reason to play.
Yep. Okay.
So, because if Cam doesn't give him reason to play, then Cam should keep playing.
One last thing on the Mac-Brady comparison, because I thought this was interesting. I talked to a coach who knows Tom, who interviewed Mac during the process, had a Zoom interview with him. And he said that, like, the personality really struck me like Tom. And I asked, what do you mean? And he said, cocky humility. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because this guy doesn't, you know, here's a story I've heard. I heard that he used to get Saban mad all the time on show team because he wouldn't just throw to the circled guy.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times those guys who coach defense want you to throw to one guy, whether he's open or not.
Yep.
Because they want them to have to play up, make a play on that. Mm-hmm. So Mac wouldn't do that. He'd throw to whoever was open on the play, and our Saban would get mad all the time. Well, I mean, you've got to have some guts with Saban to do that now.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a college kid playing on the show team. You have some have to have some guts to not throw to the circled guy.
Right. And that shows what? Competitiveness to you? That shows like some moxie, right?
Yeah. I'd say more moxie than competitiveness, because it's showing him saying, look, I'm a throw to the guy who's open. I'm not going to just pacify you and throw to the guy who's triple covered.
Was Brady a pain in the ass on the show team?
Oh, absolutely. He was
in 2000.
Competitive?
Yeah.
He was competitive. He was competitive on the show team. Now, competitive.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, before we let you go, one last thing, and I think this is just kind of hovering over all of this, and that's the Aaron Rodgers situation. So I have to ask you this because, you know the position so well and you've been around great players at the position. Obviously that situation sort of feels like it's disintegrated over the last year or so since they drafted Jordan Love. If you're Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst, the head coach and general manager in Green Bay, right now, what are you doing? How are you handling this?
Well, I think one of three things. Okay, so I'm going to go over the three things. You wait till after June 1 and trade him, because the cap hit would be too bad this year. I mean, so if they trade him, it wasn't going to be before the draft. It would just get massacred. Mm-hmm. Okay, which I don't think it's going to happen. But you might say, let's give a hypothetical. Maybe that's the reason why Denver didn't take a quarterback. You know,
right.
I'm just using that as a hypothetical. I don't think that's happening. I think you just hold on to him and say, we're playing with you this year, and then we'll worry about next year. And I think that he's a possible holdout. He's a possible holdout guy.
Yeah. It's amazing, too, because it's like it so mirrors the Brett Favre situation, like whatever it was 13 years ago. Because it was, they draft a young guy, then, you know, I think Favre saw the Patriots go out and sign Randy Moss. And so it's like, well, why can't I have that? So he gets pissed off. And like you see it now, like, you know, Rodgers looking at the Buccaneers and seeing like how aggressive they are in building around Brady. Why can't I have that? You know? And like then, you know, and then you get the young quarterback nipping at your heels. And it's just, it's so interesting how some of this stuff can... How history sort of repeats itself, you know, Charlie.
It looks like, remember David Dunn's his agent. Mm-hmm. David Dunn was the same guy who talked Carson Palmer out of Cincinnati.
Right.
Okay. So don't be surprised if they don't try a similar tack right here to try to get him out of there.
Yeah, it'll sure be interesting. All right, we appreciate you coming on, Charles, on short notice, Charles. He is all right. Now I'm going to get this right. Patriots head coach or former Patriots offensive coordinator, former Jets offensive coordinator, former Florida offensive coordinator, former Chiefs offensive coordinator, and former Kansas and Notre Dame head coach. How'd I do?
That's right. You got all those right.
Oh. I got all those right. Okay. I always appreciate the time, Charlie. And we'll have Charlie back on again soon. Appreciate you guys coming out for this special post-first round episode of the Albert Breer Show. Be sure to listen to and subscribe to all of our podcasts. This podcast, the MMQB Monday Morning Podcast, the Weekside Podcast. You can find us wherever you find all your shows, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows, we are there. We'll see you guys to wrap up the draft coming here in a few days.